From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Fireflies. They never fail to bring out that sense of first-time wonder, the excitement of a child on a summer camping trip when the sky darkens and the flashing begins. But until a new field guide reached my desk, I hardly knew anything about them beyond that feeling. In time for their flight season this year, I wanted to get a Firefly 101 so I know more about who they are and what they're doing out there. But first, this message.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
Who better to get schooled in the world of fireflies by than Lynn Frierson Faust, author of Fireflies, Glowworms, and Lightning Bugs from the University of Georgia Press, a guide to the natural history and identification of fireflies of the eastern and central U.S. and Canada. I'm so glad she's here today, so welcome, Lynn. Thanks for making time for me.
Well, thank you. We'll have some fun today.
Yes. I have to say that despite the fact that the book is about a complex subject and something I knew nothing about other than, as I just said in the intro, my wonder at them, it's written in such a way that a layperson can actually read it. You know, you really, but among all the technical details, your continuing excitement over the subject really, shines through. So, yeah.
Well, thank you. That was my goal. I wanted it scientifically accurate, but I wanted to write it in a way that was accessible to everyone because everyone likes fireflies.
Yeah.
Or lightning bugs, as we call them down here.
Yeah. Even the little touches, like in the margins on some pages, you put quotes about them from history or from literature. And there's this one I loved. It was anonymous from the late 1800s. It says, "The lightning bug is brilliant, but he hasn't any mind. He blunders through existence with his headlight on behind."
Exactly.
He's got his light on backwards.
And there's one quote. Of course, I can't find it now. I need both hands. But one from the Hudson River Valley.
Oh, from where I am.
From up there.
Yeah. So they've been capturing mankind's attention for thousands of years, I think you say in the book. Chinese writings
mm-hmm,
about them?
Kind of since the beginning of writings, we find references to fireflies.
And how long have they been a fascination for you?
Well, all my life I've loved them. I'm mm-hmm. blessed to live in the mountains of East Tennessee, and we have very rich diversity and lots of different species here. So I grew up liking them. And thinking they were magic. But you also, when you always have it, you don't appreciate it. Like some people from out west will come visit or whatever, and they go nuts when they see them because they have never witnessed them before. But then in my late 30s, this is 26 years ago, mm-hmm. I switched from just loving them as a thing of beauty to starting to really pay attention to them when I began working with research teams.
Mm-hmm.
Up in the Smokies. And really, like everyone else, pretty much, everyone thinks there's only one kind of lightning bug, one kind of firefly. And so my journey began then when I realized, oh, there's more than one type. And it went on from there and kind of expanded to the whole world.
So
mainly the eastern U.S.
How many species are there, do you want to tell us about in the east or in the book? Or give us a sense of the diversity.
I cover in detail 60 to 70 species in the book, in exquisite detail, up to 8 to 10 pages per species.
Mm-hmm.
The general number, and it's always changing, and everyone can argue about it if you're a splitter or a lumper, but generally we say 125 species, more or less, are in North America.
Okay.
So, of course, we always include Canada because the fireflies don't know boundaries. They know habitat, and so they freely move, you know, everywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
And here in the Northeast,
So 125 would be a number you could sort of hang on to.
Okay. Because, I mean, and you just sort of alluded to this, here in the Northeast where I am, you know, growing up and living now, I always, you know, when I'd see the first ones in the beginning of summer or whatever, I always thought fireflies like robins, you know, or do you know what I mean? Like it was one yes. thing or raccoon or, you know, I didn't know. I thought it was a homogeneous group of one species out there on a summer night, but it's not. Even in my literal backyard, there's more than one putting on that show potentially, yes?
Oh, yes. You have lots of them up your way, and particularly as you get, they're very habitat specific, mm-hmm. so similar to wildflowers. I'm assuming you have lots of nature lovers listening.
Yes.
Wildflowers, trees, anything like that. Many are habitat specific, and many of the firefly species are also. So some will be found only near a marsh area or in a deep forest, or some are more open species. Some are up in treetops and some are down low. And all of those represent usually different species.
So what is a firefly? What is it? Is it, you know?
It's a beetle.
Okay.
It's not a fly and it's not a bug like lightning bug. It is in the beetle family because it has the hard wing covers.
Elytra?
Called elytra.
Yeah.
That protect the real wings underneath. And to be a lightning bug, you have to glow as a larvae, as a baby. And some of them that do not flash or glow as adults, they still glowed as babies, as larvae.
Oh.
And that's one of the criteria for being a lightning bug. Another one is, and there are some exceptions, but they usually can retract their head all the way under the shield that's above their head, called the pronotum.
Oh.
And they can fully retract their head, almost like a little turtle.
Oh.
And many similar species, the soldier beetles and the click beetles and some of those that kind of look alike, they can't do that. Their heads kind of stick out all the time.
I was going to ask about that because
those are two simple things.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many. They're not, ha-ha, flashy looking, other than the fact that they flash. But, mm-hmm. you know, they're kind of, blackish with maybe a little bit of reddish, rusty, whatever color up by the head.
Right.
And, you know, not much going on in terms of, you know, flashiness when you just look at the insect. And in fact, some of those other insects that you just mentioned, they seem to mimic mm-hmm. the firefly. They look a lot alike. And you actually have a great sort of grid page of pictures in the book.
Yeah.
Lichen moths and soldier beetles and assassin bugs and how that look like fireflies. Why would another insect want to have evolved or have evolved? Why would it want to look like a firefly?
Well, it's a great question and one that scientists are still looking into deeply.
Good.
There's a long word, aposematic.
Yes.
And it just means protective coloration or actually dangerous. Think of a goth teenager or a skunk, or a coral snake. All of those have the black, the red, the yellow.
Yes.
And particularly the black. And it advertises throughout nature, and in general, lots of animals recognize it. And if they don't at first, they learn it quickly. When those colors are paired together, the aposematic colors, it means, don't eat me, I taste bad, I have chemicals,
yeah.
or I'm venomous.
Yeah.
And so the firefly truly is, most of the ones we've looked at, the species, they're little bags of defensive chemicals, which prevents most birds, most reptiles from eating them. There are some exceptions. And so the mimic bugs out there, and there are lots of them, every
yeah.
year I see different ones. They're all pretending to be somebody else. And some of them are also chemically protected. Yet others are not, but they are trying to pretend to be.
Yeah.
So they use those same black, yellow, and red colors.
Yeah.
And it's throughout nature. So, you know, if people start looking, it's sort of a fun thing. But but the lightning bugs in general are filled with interesting chemicals.
Huh.
And it does help them survive to adulthood, to be able to lay their eggs, to start the next generation, which is the whole point.
Mm. So I asked about how many species there were in North America. Are they elsewhere mm-hmm. in the world? Are they global? You know, around the globe or where?
They are. Mm-hmm. They are worldwide, except for Antarctica. It's the
okay.
only place, supposedly. And we, as a firefly community, which is quite small, but boy, we have fun when we get together. we meet every 3 years in a different hemisphere.
Oh.
To discuss all the latest research and discuss the problems we all see happening and to really get to know each other. And it's fascinating with the miracle of internet. many, many papers have come out of that with people writing with co-authors they've either never met or just met once at one of the symposiums. And but it's interesting to me, the things that we worry about here, everyone is worrying about, whether you're in Japan or Borneo or Thailand or Portugal or Brazil. Everyone is concerned of habitat fragmentation,
yes,
habitat destruction. Light pollution, particularly for fireflies, is a big one.
Oh.
And environmental toxins, the pesticides, herbicides, and all that. And so it really doesn't matter how remote you get, everyone's worrying about the same thing.
Light pollution is something that I'm very interested in. I grew up in New
yes.
York City. I was born in, you know, a part of one of the boroughs of New York City. And so, you know, light was... You know, I didn't know the real dark even when I was young.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It was the age
right,
where
exactly.
our progress as a civilization,
mm-hmm.
we were lighting and lighting and lighting and, you know, having close by neighbors and stuff like that. So last 10 years I've lived in a rural place where it's very, very dark. And
mm,
we don't have,
right.
you know, we don't have any street lamps or anything like that for a long distance.
And yeah.
and it's very different what goes on at night because of that. And I've been thinking a lot about light pollution. So, of course, this would affect these creatures of the night. What does fireflies do during the day, by the way, the adults? Where are they?
There are some that are day active, the diurnal ones, and for the most part, these are the ones that no longer have lanterns.
Okay.
They've lost them through evolution. The ones that flash at night, they just sort of hang out, and you rarely see them, even
yeah.
with populations like the famous one in the Smokies that has thousands and thousands each night. You would think during the day you'd see them kind of hanging on the bottoms of leaves and things, and you really don't.
Huh.
So they go to some sort of cool, hidden, safe place, and we don't know where that is.
They're not
but,
telling.
I mean, you run into some of them. The park bathroom walls, actually,
sure.
I go there to do census. I can tell which species are out. I'll go to those cool, moist bathroom, they're old-timey kind of block
uh-huh.
walls, and go there to check to see which species are currently coming out, because
huh.
I can find them there. But
Generally,
you don't see them yeah. much during the day.
So I hate to even ask how they light up, because in the book I know you say it's complicated. and so don't try to explain the chemistry of that necessarily as
okay.
much as what is the light about? What's it for? Why do they do it?
Okay. Again, you get a bunch of firefly people together, and they'll have, you know, 50 different reasons. And
mm-hmm.
we do think it's actually multiple reasons. Now, primarily in the world now, it's primarily for mating. And it's
okay.
A love song that the male sings through light to try to attract a female to answer back. The females are usually hidden down in the leaves, and he's the one you see at night. When you're a little girl chasing them in
yeah.
your yard or your
yeah.
grandmother's yard, it's the males that fly around. They're flashy. They want to be seen. And each species has its own specific little pattern it does that only his female will recognize. And when one of them catches the female's eye, she will bend her little abdomen, and she usually just has a little light, a little tiny lantern, and she will aim it at the male she wants and flash. And hopefully he sees her and lands, and they mate. But that is where light pollution comes in. It's devastating because no firefly can compete against a glaring outdoor light. And so,
huh.
yeah, but it's their song of love. Also, the larvae also glow. They're more of what we call the glow worms, and they will glow periodically. And it is considered that that is still aposematic. It is warning the frogs and the birds out there, don't eat me.
That
tastes bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's actually a multi-pronged. They also will flash uncontrollably when they're in a spider web. There are some spiders that eat them, regardless
oh.
of the chemicals. And when fireflies are stressed, certain genera flash and others go dark. It's very specific on which species you're looking at. So
huh.
And the flashes are caused by chemistry and oxygen and ATP and an intricate mechanism. But
mm-hmm.
it's something they're born with, and you know they can. It's amazing, and it's cold light. It's not hot light. So.
Oh, no heat is generated. Uh-huh.
Yeah, no heat is generated. And,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a pretty miraculous process when you think about it. But light pollution is something So I ask people, a very simple thing to do is turn out your lights when you're in for the night.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people feel like they have to have 32 floodlights on. We actually have a neighbor with that.
Yes.
It's like, why do you want all these floodlights?
Yes.
But the simple thing of just turning them off and shield your lights.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
So it
sounds
like
outdoor lights.
It sounds like the flashing, it's like skywriting. It's like a silent language, yeah.
And it is.
And you said each species. Yeah, they
speak,
each species sort of speaks it a little bit differently, distinctively. And in the front of the book, sort of a fold out chart, this amazing thing called Male Primary Courtship Flashes. And it goes species by species, and it's this chart. And so in each increment across the top, the grid, the horizontal, I guess you would call that, across the top, it is by second, pulses of seconds. And it shows you either if there's the first six boxes, or, you know, each have a pulse, a little dot in it, then you know it pulses every second six times. Or if there's two dots in each of 3 1-second boxes, you know, that's the pattern. And so really interesting in the shape. All of it is just fascinating that they make these pictures.
In your yard, and this is the way I began, too. First you go, I want to find out what I have in my yard.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be surprised. You'll have more than you originally think. But once you kind of get good at your own little yard, what you have, and initially you might have to catch a few and look at them up close. But once you learn that flash, the flash patterns, you can survey a forest and go, oh, well, that's a such and such, and that's a such and such. And if it, just simply by their flash pattern.
Okay.
Which is always paired with temperature, by the way. The hotter it is, the faster everything goes.
Okay.
But it is fun, so don't try to learn all of them at first. Just learn the one in your yard.
Right,
and
right.
You will also find, if you write it down, it will appear the same time and the same place every year.
Okay.
Because they're habitat specific. So it's not as hard as it seems. And then once you've learned yours, you can go, you know, a little further to a local park or something, see if they have anything new. But you'll get to where you'll recognize that you've not seen that before, and that's how you find the new ones.
So they're neither, they're neither a garden pest, but are they, I mean, they're not a garden pest, you know, at all, but are they a beneficial insect in some way? Do they have a role? Are they the favorite food of someone else? Where do they fit in ecologically, sort of into the web of life thing?
From the human perspective, they're almost neutral, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
They bring a lot of intangibles of happiness and warmth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everybody likes looking at them.
Mm-hmm.
And they, I have a young man that's going to propose to his lady love this summer, and he's been consulting with me for weeks on when is the best night to come to the Smokies to do his proposal. So they have those sort of benefits to man that you can't really measure. But as far as they don't seem, their larvae are predators and live in the soil. And so those larvae eat lots of little tiny microscopic and small insects, all the way up to roaches. I've seen a larvae run down a living roach and catch it and eat it.
Wow, that's my last name. Watch out there. Don't. You know.
So they are part of the web of life. And so when we kill all the garden pests, you actually indirectly are affecting them because there's not as much for the larvae to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And the larvae live, particularly up your way, up to 2 to 3 years. Here, they're more on a one-year cycle. So they do eat things, but they are not considered, they're not an agricultural pest. They don't carry disease. And, you know, they eat little things in the soil. And the adults generally don't eat at all, with the exception of milkweed, which is sort of a new finding. And they do technically pollinate milkweed, but they are not a super important pollinator.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're just kind of a neutral, happy little insect, which is one reason I like them. Nobody screams at me about them, and everyone seems to like them. And so they're sort of a happy little insect.
Yeah. So in our last few minutes, I want to talk about, you've mentioned the Smokies a couple of times. Is that kind of one of the, is that sort of the American epicenter of firefly activity? What are some of the hot spots around the U.S.? Where
the hot spots, they're actually quite a few. It depends on what you're looking for. The Smokies by accident, sort of became very famous for one particular species called Photinus carolinus, and the males flash in synchrony with each other. They flash six times quickly, followed by six long seconds of dark, and then they all flash again, and then it's dark again. And it's fabulous. But whatever, I like people to know this, they stretch from North Georgia all the way up to New York. They go up the Appalachians. They're an Appalachian type of firefly. Mm-hmm. And they're in certain elevations. They like the high montane river valleys, and they like mature forest. And they're found throughout. It does seem that the Great Smoky Mountains is the epicenter for this species because the density is enormous in an area, Tennessee and North Carolina, in the Appalachians. But mm-hmm. they are all the way. I mean, I've seen them up there in southern New York and northern Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And there's some nice displays of that species there. But other than that species, the hottest spots that used to be were northern Florida and southern Georgia. There was mm-hmm. kind of a strip they call like the Fertile Crescent that had 56 species just right there.
Oh, my.
And no one has done a survey recently. I've been down there and did see some pretty exciting things, but there is so much pesticide and
yes.
agricultural.
Yes.
Pesticides have affected a lot of that, unfortunately. Spraying for mosquitoes, you know, all that stuff's hard on them.
Mm-hmm.
And development, of course, Florida is so overdeveloped now.
Yes.
And so it used to be the hot spot, but now it's sort of the Southeast has more species than, say, you do in New York, but you have a lot of them,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you might have more individuals of the fewer types of species.
Right.
But I was actually amazed that there wasn't that much difference between Tennessee and northern Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and New York. There, a few species replace each other, and we do have a few southern ones that you don't have, but generally you have plenty,
and,
you know, and real variety.
In the Middle West or the Pacific Northwest, they have fireflies? Do they have a lot? I mean, other areas of the country
yeah,
that have, yeah, or not?
They do, but we need some firefly nerds to develop out there. There are some very obscure ones. They don't do the brilliant flashing
okay.
out there. In the West.
Okay.
We have found some populations as far west as California and some up in Alberta that do flash, but they're very isolated and you really have to look for them. But there are some fascinating members of the firefly family in the West, even in the deserts, the Mojave Desert. I mean, these odd places has these super specialized, interesting fireflies, but you won't be able to sit in your lawn chair and watch them flash past you.
And the
actually will have to look for them.
And the Midwest, is there in the middle of the country?
The Midwest has quite a few.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Okay.
And then Texas is like its own world. It has things that come up from Central America. It almost needs its own book. They have so many. But the Midwest has some fabulous displays. And sometimes they'll reach huge numbers of one species. But then generally when you get toward the Rockies, everything sort of starts falling apart, and you get down to the little bitty isolated populations around springs or places. And unfortunately, a lot of development, the populations that existed 50 years ago often no longer exist because of development.
Well,
and oh, and as you go out west, to me this is interesting, there are two types of females, females with wings and females that never grow wings.
Mm-hmm.
And as you go west, more and more of them have the females that never grow wings.
Oh.
So they are very vulnerable to extinction.
Oh.
They only move a few meters their whole life. They can't leave. And so you disturb habitat, and they're usually gone.
Well,
they can't repopulate.
Lynn Frierson Faust, I mean, the book is great.
Okay.
It really woke me up. So thank you, thank you. And I appreciate your taking the time to speak with me today.
Well, thank you, Margaret.
Okay.
And I want you to figure out what you have in your yard and report back to me, okay?
I'll email
okay.
you.
okay,
okay,
great.
Bye-bye.
All right, thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
Thanks to all of you for listening. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes. Find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or facebook.com/awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.